Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Your source for big game talk, it's Off Tackle Empire!
Welcome to Off Tackle Empire. For a few more days, SB Nation's only Big Ten football-focused podcast that is on the network. Again, for a few more days, because we welcome you to what is the final installment of our podcast after, I believe, we covered six seasons of football. I don't know if we did that many of basketball. We covered quite a few seasons, is my point. If you heard our basket cast yesterday, then you'll know that we're being kicked off of the SB Nation
network. They done deplatformed us because they're tired of the truths we're out here telling. So the mainstream media is just out here censoring our free speech.
Help us, Elon.
Was that what's going to finally drag me into mainstream Twitter? Is requesting direct help from Elon Musk?
Well, I mean, in this. Right after they announced that they were unbanning accounts, I noticed that my burner at Jimmy Rantoul was suspended still for a while, and I just had a unban request. I literally said, "Please help Elon. They are trying to silence my free speech." Was my reason that I should be reinstated, and I was like almost immediately. The problem is, I've just kind of. It's not as fun now that we actually have functional teams. Jimmy Rantoul was a time and place, and it feels like that doesn't exist anymore. Plus, half the people Jimmy Rantoul was retweeting, the Illini fans, have been off Twitter for roughly 2 years and 1 month and a few weeks.
You don't say. I wonder if anything happened to those people. Even though we're miles away from football season, we have a lot of things we want to cover and we want to go over with you guys. I mean, there's always something happening. Like the news that broke today that former Big Ten legend Russell Wilson tried to get Pete Carroll and John Schneider fired in Seattle. And then he denied it. But it's like, no, that's pretty obviously something that he would have done. So there's always something. We're not going to delve into that too deep, unless you have particular thoughts about that. But
well, it's really funny that they hired 28-year-old Davis Webb as his quarterback coach in Denver.
A guy who started playing his NFL career after Russell Wilson. I don't think he probably had a handful of starts in those years, when Eli Manning was on the way out before they drafted Daniel Jones. I think he had a few starts in there. But he was never any good. Clipboard holder for a couple of other teams, and then has gone straight from being a backup wherever he was to.
He played for Sonny Dykes Cal, if I'm not mistaken.
He did, yeah. He was. I think he would have been after Jared Goff.
I think Webb came out after. Wait a minute, Davis Webb, I believe also. Okay, this is now.
He's only 28. He couldn't have been in college 10. He couldn't be finishing his college career.
This is now the David Webb hour. Is how we're spending the final podcast. He played for Texas Tech. That's right.
Before that, yeah, before we went to Cal for year two.
And anyway, he was drafted in 2017.
Yeah, that's. I thought it was something like that.
All right, anyway, we've got to move on to Big Ten-related things, because this is, after all, the final podcast.
Sure.
I am Steve Braun. I go as Thumpasaurus. This is Andrew Krzyzewski. And we have to look towards a future without this podcast, but with more conference expansion.
Inevitably, the wheel that will... Well, I won't say it'll never stop turning, because in the last couple of years, and we talked about this when the USC and UCLA move was announced, I think the final form is at least in sight. It might not... It could still be a while before it gets here, but eventually, inevitably, I think you end up with a Big Ten and SEC, you know, partnership isn't the word because no one will ever want to say they're partners with those people. Well, look, like neither side will want that.
I just don't think that we know what it looks like, because have you ever finished a game of Monopoly? Actually finished one?
I was a lunatic when I was a child, so yes, I have.
Okay, so you know how dark it gets.
I was the kid who was determined to win capitalism, which is when you have all the money and nobody else has anything, and they have to sit there and look at you have all the money. That's the goal of Monopoly. It's also the goal of capitalism. And
it's also the goal of adding USC and UCLA.
By the time I was like 10 or 11, most of my friends knew better than to accept a game of Monopoly with me, because I would not walk away from the table unless I was beaten, which was pretty rare because I cheated relentlessly. I think this is the first time I've admitted that at the age of 34. Oh,
so anyway,
I don't think anybody who's going to be in position to hold me accountable listens to this podcast, but we'll see if I get any texts.
The most pressing question, I mean, we've seen kind of how they're going to try and schedule football and such. I mean, nobody's addressing the obvious, well, USC playing at Memorial Stadium at what, their 10, or, you know, they, yeah, their 9 o'clock local time for their body clock. And, you know, especially the way that basketball could be impacted by having those, you know, those away games and all that.
Now, presumably you will just not schedule them on any noon Eastern kicks. You'll just have them play afternoon to night games whenever they fly east. And then you would probably not want to schedule any night games in California for teams flying west. Like, it's easier to solve than everyone. I mean, the hand-wringing about how could we possibly make clocks work, like, I don't know, man. How do NHL teams go from playing in Western Canada back on the West Coast, or back on the East Coast? Like,
well, see,
it's not that difficult. It takes resources, but the Big Ten has money. Like,
yeah.
Everyone's like, how are they ever going to afford to fly the basketball team? And I think, like, they're going to spend the incredible amounts of money they have doing that. That's how it's going to happen. Like, that's not really a problem, I don't think.
There's just no way that this stops at 12, or not 12, at 16. There's no way it stops at 12 was what we all said when Nebraska happened. I don't know if we thought that, but in any case, the reason that it can't stop at 16 is because Kevin Warren pulled a critical Jenga block out from under the Pac-12. If you think I'm exaggerating, they just announced a major TV partner. It's ION TV.
ION TV.
I don't even know what that is.
Right after reruns of Green Arrow, they're going to lead straight in to Utah, Arizona State for, you know, bidding the conference title game. Yeah, I saw that today. No, it's one of those channels that everybody gets for free. It's like an over-the-air daytime TV.
Freeform, that one channel that just streams the Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings movies?
Yeah, pretty much.
Basically nothing else?
Pretty much.
That's Leah's favorite channel, by the way.
Yeah, man.
Washington? When are Oregon and Washington happening? Because they're not going to stand idly by and watch their games get ION TV as their primary. I mean, Apple is...
It's been a while since we had any movement on this story, but the last news that we had on this topic was the Big Ten had an invite out to Notre Dame, and they were going to take their time and wait and basically see if anything else shakes loose. I don't think that's a great maneuver, because honestly, I think waiting is what cost them Texas and Oklahoma. Now, who knows? Maybe those two were always going to go to the SEC instead. But the Big Ten never even made that offer, as far as anyone knows, because they didn't feel like they had to. They felt like the best available options were always going to come to them. And I think that's a little bit of a lazy and presumptuous mindset.
Well, years before Texas and Oklahoma left, I said that it would be a matter of who secured them, because there was no way they were going to be in the Big 12 when the rights expired at the end of 2024. They were going to be in a new conference in 2025. The question is, who's going to do it?
And the Big 10 opted not to do it for whatever reason. I have no idea why. I can't imagine anyone involved with making these decisions for the conference ever thought that 14 was a solid and like the number forever. Like that was never going to be the end stage either. So if you're going to go, if you're going to get more, like if there's a better couple of schools than USC and UCLA to add for an athletics conference, Texas and Oklahoma would have been those two. And that, you know, that train left the station. So to answer your question as to when Oregon and Washington, it's a long summer. It's a long off season. Like who's to say that we won't get some announcement, but if this media rights deal, this negotiation for the Pac-12 continues to go so disastrously, I mean, their conference commissioner was making comments that basically made it clear like they're going to continue fishing around as well. Like, oh, well, we might expand. We might add some schools. And then what would you do? Like, yeah, by all means, go ahead and grab South Florida and add that to the media package, and Ion will be tripping over themselves to give you dozens of dollars per game.
It's amazing that our, you know, lower tier soccer team is now in a position to have roughly as stable a league rivalry situation as our college football teams do now, because now it's going to be changing every few years who you play. And that's kind of been the problem with one of the big problems with sustaining anything in lower level soccer is that, well, when the teams just keep changing every few years, your opponents change from year to year all the time. It's like, well, who do we care about? What do we, you know, okay, so we're going to play this team this many times for this many years, and then we're going to have all these other teams. And one of the problems is that you can't expand the college football regular season, really. You really can't.
Oh, why not? You think that?
Well,
why not?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it would be another stage in the complete decoupling of football from the actual schools.
Yeah, man, you think what?
Yeah, that's,
once you get to a certain fair. Once you get to a certain dollar value, you really think the college administrators, the people making these decisions, are going to give a damn whether there are students in the building when the games are played? They'll start playing games in July if they can get away with it. If it means they have more product to sell, absolutely. And it like that's I think that in terms of the chicken and egg here, you're going to see those moves when they are forced to directly compensate. Like there are, again, like there was another case in federal court. The NCAA's position is to just stand there and get tomatoes thrown at them by a federal judge. Every time one of these issues comes up, they lose, and that's going to keep happening. Like it feels very much like an emperor has no clothes thing. Like the first person pointed something out, and now every time the issue comes up in court, anything about this whole amateurism structure they've cloaked themselves in, everyone just points out that the NCAA's terrible schlong is hanging out. No, I don't think there's anything preventing them from expanding the regular season. In fact, I think the incentive is considerable to do that, because then they can, if they end their season in December and start it even earlier, you know, start it in July or August, then you don't have to compete with the NFL. And then you can play more games on Sunday. You can basically have, like, the last few years there have been all these attempts to start an alternate league to the NFL, you know, the XFL and the USFL. I don't think anyone's realized that there is an alternative that exists already, and that, I mean, if I was running the sport, I would try to shift as many of my games out of competition with the NFL as possible, because the NFL is going to be playing games on Black Friday now. They're going to try to take every possible moment of airtime that they can get, but they're not going to push their season back any further. So anyway, I don't even remember what the original question was here.
I guess what the next stage of the conference wars is. I mean, I don't know. As long as we get to, long as we still continue to have to play the Gers, I guess it's everything's fine with me.
Well, I mentioned I thought I knew where it was going, and that is, I mean, this is not an original thought. I didn't come up with this, but I think it's going towards, you know, Big Ten and SEC taking the role of AFC and NFC. They have, you know, 18, 20, 22, whatever teams apiece. They play entirely within themselves and then spit out X number, whether it's 4, 6, or 8 teams to go into a combined playoff with the other league, and on we go. Or you just present one champion at the end, or you play each other. It's, you know, those details can be hashed out. But
the great thing about the way that the NFL is structured, the great thing about the way that the schedules are set up is that you have these 4-team divisions, and because they've been together for such a long time, and they play each other twice, so their games are very important, there's genuine rivalry that happens here. In a lot of cases, it's historical, but the NFL has never had particularly big divisions. They started the division thing as soon as the AFL merger happened to try to keep, you know, rivalries intact and make sure that they could be fostered. I mean, you know, think about it, especially like the AFC North, Pittsburgh, the Browns, the team that used to be the Browns, and the Bengals.
Sure. Here's my question for you, though. You say they want to protect and foster these rivalries. I still think you're approaching this with the mind of a pure fan. You're not who they make these decisions for. If you were to look at the so first of all, obviously the Super Bowl is always the most watched game. That's never a rivalry game. It has nothing to do with rivalries. But if you look at all the other top broadcasted games, I bet very few of them are these traditional rivalries that you think the NFL really puts stock in.
Except there's always protecting. It feels like every Steelers Ravens game is on Sunday night.
That doesn't mean that they have the highest ratings. I mean, usually it's just because those two teams are good. That hasn't been the case the last couple of years either. I don't recall them being on Sunday night this past season. I know that my point is, I know that to you and me, preserving rivalries is hugely important, and that's what we want to see. It's not how they're going to go about this. They're going to make as much product as they can and sell it on as many days as they can to as many different broadcasters as they can, which, by the way, gets us to the next thing. Another stage of the Conference Wars is going to be unbundling the broadcast rights so that they're not all with one network, and it becomes even more of a pain in the ass to watch your team every week if that's all that you want to do. You've seen this with Peacock. You've seen this with BTN Plus and ESPN Plus. Good luck finding one fee that you can pay, regardless of the amount, and actually get a hold of all of your team's broadcasts. That's going to be the future, is three games on ABC, three games on the SEC Network, three games on SEC Network Plus, three games on SEC The Ocho. That's...
Well, I'm just going to continue to call it Poopcock, as opposed to Peacock.
Uh-huh.
So, speaking of poop... one of the great regrets I'm going to have about not being able to, about not covering this upcoming season is...
Cannot do Brian Ferentz contract watch.
No, we cannot do weekly updates on the Brian Ferentz situation because, God, this is just one of the funniest contracts I've ever seen. There's just been... I loved that 1 month or so where Iowa fans were trying desperately to find some way that they could get out of this. Like, it was real... You talk about the bargaining stage. I've never seen bargaining like this because there was never at any point a hint that anything would be done. And there was a thing where, hiring Bill O'Brien back to the Patriots was seen as a potential way to maybe ship Brian off to the
maybe
Patriots.
Maybe they'll get the band back together and they'll hire him to coach the offensive line. And it's like, it's bargaining. But in a situation where you personally do not have anything that you can exchange for the metaphysical bargain you're trying to pull off, it was grim. Understandable, but grim. And so, you know, 25 points per game is the incentive that he has to hit in his contract. It includes points scored by the defense and special teams. So, you know, when Cooper DeJean has 4 punt return touchdowns over the course of the season, in addition to their 5, 6, 7 defensive touchdowns, that gives him a huge boost towards getting there. You know, that would be 300 points total in the regular season, 325 if they go to a bowl, which they probably will. It would be 350 if they make a conference title game, in which they would probably not score 25 points because... Gosh, they certainly have not belonged on the field when they've gone to the title game recently. So, yeah, man, that's perhaps one of my biggest, deepest regrets about this is we're never going to be able to track it. I know there are other folks out there covering the sport still who I'm sure will do a perfectly good job, but we really would have enjoyed that. It truly is unfortunate.
Do you know what would be absolutely phenomenal? Illinois and Iowa play in the second to last week of the season, and... If we had a situation where Illinois had like a 3-score lead, you're fairly late in the fourth quarter, and we were doing some math on what Brian's average is, and we just kind of sent in a bunch of walk-ons on defense.
They cut to Bird on the sideline. He's just like, you know, he's like pointing over the other sideline, like, I got you, dude. I got, like, we'll get this money. We'll get this money for you, bro.
Yeah, so Iowa added Cade McNamara and Eric All from Michigan. Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, pieces. Yeah, they're good pieces, but, you know, they always, as they do every year, they lost all their wide receiver recruits, like all their freshmen.
Sure, but I don't know if that really does matter. I mean, the last time Iowa's offense looked any good was when they had Noah Fant and TJ Hawkinson, and I think All and Laporta could be every bit as good as those guys were. You know, they had a couple of promising running game with, oh my god, why can't I remember anybody's name anymore? I'm getting too old for this. The freshman running back, Keegan Johnson's the receiver. Come on, help me out here. Save me.
Oh my Save god. Me. Was it one of the Williams guys?
No. LaShawn Williams is still there. Gavin Williams left. This is the third guy, the freshman.
Oh, I think that guy was a Johnson.
Yes, but it wasn't Keegan Johnson because that's the receiver. I'm so close to having this guy's name. I can't believe this.
Caleb Johnson.
Yes. Aha. Uh-huh. I knew it was something with a K, and I was like, it's not Keegan. I know it's not Keegan because they had Keegan Johnson, and Keegan Murray was a basketball player. It's not Chris because Chris is the other Murray. I'm still not convinced that Iowa isn't just sending out the same guy over and over again and doing the face-off surgery to him, because a lot of similar NCAA football-ass names in that athletic department.
Hey, look, I'll tell you what. If they've moved to doing that surgery as opposed to, you remember the surgery that Iowa running backs used to get? Was to, you know, repair their ACL?
Yeah. Angry Iowa running back, hating God.
So Iowa, of course, brings us to... Again, another regret is the final season of Big Ten West football is 2023, and Wisconsin is threatening to, on paper, make it less Big Ten Westy. But I've got a lot of faith that it can be the greatest Big Ten West season that we've ever had. Of course, you know, if you didn't listen to my Big Ten West anthem, it's time to go do that, because I think I summed up the whole experience there.
Okay, check it out. Thumpasaurus is back. Steppin' out. Signed a deal to become a head coach in the Big Ten West. Let me tell you my approach. See, I know what wins games. I know what's good for us. Tight ends and fullbacks. 3 yards and a cloud of dust. I tell recruits.
Let me talk to you. Tell you how it is. I was thinking when I saw that body, gotta add 40 pounds in your redshirt season. Here we emphasize strength and conditioning. Gotta take charge and get large to be in the barge package with 7 down linemen. I just want to pound the rock. Word. Eat up yards, run the clock. Word. We don't need to pass block. Word. We can't risk a drop, it'll make the clock stop. I just want to pound the rock. Word. Eat up yards, run the clock. Word. We don't need to pass block. Word. We can't risk a drop, it'll make the clock stop. Now we face fourth and short, but we ain't gonna score. Let me see if we should punt it. Yes, indeed, we will punt it. We got stopped on that drive. Down on there, 35. Hit them deep when we punt it. Make them weep when we punt it. You'll see, we'll win the battle for field position. Dictate the tempo. My punter is from Australia. And if you're Zane, I don't know what to tell you. Do you know about time of possession? It's my favorite stat, it is my obsession. I know you heard about me, but guess what's going down if we take the lead? I just want to pound the rock. Word. Eat up yards, run the clock. Word. We don't need to pass block. Word. We can't risk a drop, it'll make the clock stop. I just want to pound the rock. Word. Eat up yards, run the clock. Word. We don't need to pass block. Word. We can't risk a drop, it'll make the clock stop. I don't care if we score, if we win the battle for. Feel position when we punt it. Be efficient when we punt it. 3rd and 8 in the gun. Gonna fool everyone. Quarterback's gonna punt it. Got no slack when we punt it. Maybe if we spy.
If we spy.
9 men in the box.
In the box.
We run a little play action. Look for a fullback out in the flat. But you know what they say about throwing a pass. There's only 3 things that can happen, and 2 of them are bad.
That's why we need trench raiders, straight road graders. We roll 5 yards at a time on these haters. They say it's boring, they can't face reality. We win with mental toughness, grit, and physicality. The important thing is to establish the run, make them cheat up to the line, and then it's time for some fun. Yo, not with a deep ball. Were you even listening? Send out the field goal unit and hear me whispering.
Wait till you see me kick. Wait till you see me kick.
Put 3 on the board. It wasn't pretty, but we scored. This is man ball. Go run track if you're too bored. This is meat and potatoes. This is corn on the cob. Clap, clap. Good effort. Hustle off. Great job. And don't sweat all the haters and lames, cause we gon' win 8 games.
Now we face, fourth and short, but we ain't gonna score. Let me see if we should punt it. Yes indeed, we will punt it. We got stopped on that drive, down on there, 35. Hit them deep when we punt it. Make them weep when we punt it.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Well, I have no idea what Purdue's offense is now going to look like. Is there? I mean, I don't know if there's been any indication about that.
Well, the offensive coordinator that they hired was, if I'm not mistaken, Graham Harrell.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, so that suggests they're probably going to try to keep winging it around. But man, looking elsewhere, and yeah, so Wisconsin bringing in Tanner Mordecai presumably is not going to be the same, you know, pig and slop offense that the rest of the division has been. But you're still going to have Illinois, Northwestern, Iowa, and Minnesota all trying to run as few plays and get out of there as fast as possible. So, you know, calling me skeptical that there's going to be especially dynamic watching for us. You've got, again, a first-year coach in Nebraska as well. As far as who wins the Big Ten West, I think Wisconsin feels like the safest bet. Massive coaching upgrade. Even the other thing I saw recently was Jim Leonard was supposedly getting some NFL defensive coordinator interest. But they've done a lot to address their problems in the transfer portal. And I haven't seen frankly, I haven't seen much activity from any of the other programs as far as that goes.
I'll tell you where a lot of the NFL interest was. It was by fans of the Green Bay Packers, who don't understand why you keep playing behind the sticks on third down. Why you can't just jam up the Titans receivers. Why you get carved up by Ryan Tannehill in a game that really matters for the playoffs. That didn't end up materializing. They stuck with whoever the hell it is now. It's not Dom Capers, who, by the way, had the greatest fake hair I think I've ever seen. It looks exactly like Lego hair. He was introduced as part of the Carolina Panthers coaching staff.
How old is Dom Capers? He's been at it
a long ass time.
Now I gotta find out. Hold on.
So
age 72. And oh my god, yeah, that is this dude is straight out of the line. I haven't seen a picture of him recently.
Well, this is, I gotta go in the article. I've gotta put this picture up there.
He was the first coach of the Panthers.
Wow.
The first head coach of the Panthers in 1995, and now he's back as their defensive coordinator. Wow.
So, Iowa, it's safe to assume, is going to be Iowa. it's really hard to expect anything positive from Northwestern after the last 2 years. Like, even if they have a better season, it's really difficult to talk yourself
better could
into...
mean better could mean four wins.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean they're coming from such a deep hole all of a sudden. Of course, you know, look at their basketball team.
Sure,
but that's not quite the same thing because they don't have, you know, they don't have these same players that they've been rolling with as part of their core for years.
No, and in basketball, two guys having a good season can completely change your outlook. Whereas in football, two guys having a good season is like, oh, well, guess they're going to the NFL after this year. Like, you know, it's just a totally different vibe. Like, the amount of bodies you have to have moving in the right direction is an entirely different thing.
Illinois adds Luke Altmaier, transfer quarterback from Ole Miss, who, you know, transferred because he couldn't beat out former five-star Jackson Dart. And then who was the quarterback that they had that went to the Panthers?
Matt Corral.
Yeah, it couldn't beat out those guys. So, you know, whatever. I think he projects as potentially maybe an upgrade, but it does suck that we're going to go from my favorite bit ever, Big Time Tommy, to my least favorite bit, which, you know, every single time he makes a play, you got to go, Luke, because his name rhymes with Boo.
Well, you should resist that, though, and instead make Skyrim-related puns because his last name is basically Altmeri. So,
yeah,
you know, that's just my opinion, but you do with that what you will. The real question for me is, are you going to find that Chase Brown was doing the Kenneth Walker thing for your offense, and without him, you got to come up with stuff a lot more deliberately and organically, and yeah, we'll see if that actually happens.
It feels like the receiving core could be a little more complete, only because Malik Elzey is one of the top recruits to commit to Illinois in a while, and he could be that kind of outside, go-up-and-get-it guy that...
But you have that guy! I spent all of last season hollering to throw the ball to Pat Bryant more, and you didn't. So I don't think having the outside guy matters if you don't have an offense designed to use him.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, we'll see if Barry Looney has any business continuing to be the offensive coordinator. I mean, Minnesota actually is kind of becoming like Iowa in that you can expect them to kind of be Iowa.
Iowa without quite the heights of defensive and special teams scoring.
They're not quite as min-maxed as a build.
Yeah, well, and so because of that, they've been on the outside looking in several times here, and I don't know if there's anything about their trajectory or build that suggests there's much ceiling left for them.
Nevertheless, this is the Big Ten West, and there's a lot of teams that are looking, like Wisconsin in particular is one that I'm really curious how that turns out, because on paper they look fantastic, but history is littered with teams that looked fantastic on paper.
Yeah, I need to go back no further than last fall in my prediction of Nebraska to finally break through. Man, that's the thing where you, like, it's late in the night at a poker table and your head's up and you've got like a pair of sevens and there's all kinds of draws on the board such that you could be hosed already. But it's like, hey, you know what? It's late. I need to go home. I'm the short stack anyway. Let me go all in with these sevens. And it's like, oh, you have a flush already. I'm drawing dead. So that was the sensation after the first game of the Big Ten year last season. And that'll be maybe a good segue into one of our other questions we wanted to answer here, which is, what was your worst take on this podcast? So I'd like to absolve myself a little bit here, though, because as I'm sure everyone remembers, I was not even super wrong about that until well into the season. Like, it was late October before Nebraska actually fell back more than a couple games in the Big Ten West race. They're in, like, second place for a long time. Now, part of that was they just didn't play any more conference games for a while after that first game.
And then they beat Indiana.
Yeah, and so it wasn't like... It's not like I predicted them to go 12-0 and win the national title or something. Like, I was not as radically far off. It just felt like it because of how bad they looked and the fact that they then lost the games in the non-conference. They got their coach fired. It was after all that it's like, oh... Actually, because of a schedule quirk, they're still in this, and it's, you know, mid to late October. So I don't think I was all that far off base there. Any particular prognostications that you have felt a little red in the face about?
Well, because there's a few factors to consider. One is how wrong it was, and second is how firmly you declared it. Because I had a couple that were pretty wrong, one of which was Brett Bielema having a disastrous start to his inaugural season, losing what seemed like, you know, what should have been their easiest and most winnable games, that there were all kinds of what looked like warning signs then. It, of course, didn't occur to me.
Let's not try to put lipstick on that particular pig. You said this is a disaster. The clock is ticking until we fire this guy.
Yeah, more or less.
Until then, all of our games are meaningless. That's how sure you were that it was a disaster.
I've been watching Illinois football for a long time, and it does not register to me that it is possible for an Illinois football team to be playing better football in November than in the earlier part of the season.
Sure, and your previous experience informed your opinion, but as I tried to explain to you at the time, yes, but that actually doesn't have anything to do with what's happening right now, because these are different coaches, they are different players for the most part. It's a different situation. Like, the fact that they're wearing the same uniforms does not matter at all. You know, once upon a time, the Detroit Lions won championships. Does that matter to their current pedigree? No, it certainly doesn't. So
I was very glad to be wrong about that one. A take I've had this year that is really aging quite poorly was that RJ Melendez was going to be a breakout player in his sophomore year and, like, lead the way for Illinois. He was going to be, like, our focal point. And oh my God.
It was not a totally unreasonable thing, though. There were flashes last year where it's like, oh yeah, this guy could be something.
And until, it's hard to even say anything about the Minnesota game, but he's mostly been unplayable. Underwood has been sticking with him because, you know, if he figures it out in time for the tournament, that's all that we need. But oh my God, there have been times this year where I thought, oh, going to see him in the Horizon League in a few years, maybe, you know, having a good season for, like, Oakland or something.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of other predictions we've made here, I don't know, like, I'm thinking about things that I said the most, things that I stuck with.
Well, there were several years where we said, surely Wisconsin football can't keep doing this. Surely they're going to fall off.
This is the year they drop off. And then the year we went all in was the year when they did fall off flat on their faces. So
yeah, and of course, we continued.
Arguably their best team.
We continued to try to speak Jeff Brom Purdue into existence.
We succeeded. They made a conference title game, and they had a decent chance to win it. We did succeed, although not until after I gave up on that particular mission. So when I threw my hands up after their clock management in the Penn State game to open last season and said,
God,
I am done with you, Jeff. I can't do this anymore. That was when they finally put it all together and won the division. And then he rides off to dear old alma mater and presumably all the Papa John's he could eat, which, God.
Which is not very much Papa John's, to be perfectly honest. So, we've just had to come back from a break because we decided to not upgrade from Zoom Basic in the very last one of these that we're recording. And so, I had a chance to refill with the last of whatever whiskey was in my decanter. I do not remember what this was. I know it was a very nice bottle because I put it in my decanter. But yep. It was so long ago that I forgot about it. I think this was actually from my old house, so I mean, tasting it didn't give me any insights. I believe it's a bourbon. It tastes more bourbon-y than anything. Could be a Jefferson Ocean bottle, but in the future, I'm going to have to make some process adjustments to how I do this. But in any case, the basketball game that I was dreading last night turned out to be exactly as horrible as I feared it would be for roughly one half.
Yeah, I went to bed around halftime thinking to myself, well, at least Steve took out a very large sadness insurance policy that he can now make a claim on. And then I woke up this morning and glanced at some scores and saw that your team had come back and won. And I was like, oh, well, good for him. He wasted a lot of money, but he's going to be happy. But he's happy.
But
so
I actually made money because when Illinois fell off for the first time, Illinois started the second half on a bit of a tear and then kind of fell off. And when they did that, I decided, things look hopeless. I'm going to bet Illinois at 6-1 odds, money line, as a hedge in case I lose all this money. So now I'm covered either way. I locked in the profit. Basically, it'll be like I'm going to make a lot of money being really sad or make back my insurance money with something amazing. And what happened was Terrence Shannon Jr., the one from the Vegas game, not the one we've been seeing for most of the season, showed up and stuffed Boo Booey into a locker and took his lunch money.
And so with this technique perfected, are you even going to give your employer notice or are you just going to walk off the job?
Who knows? I don't know. I mean, obviously, if you bet a lot, you know that every time you raise your limits, every time you raise your units, you're going to lose like all your bets that day. And then you're going to have to go down. But betting is a thing that I often do for emotional insurance reasons. And what I didn't anticipate, I guess, was that I don't know what it was that woke up Terrence Shannon's final form. But as a Chicago native, it may have been something that somebody said about Northwestern and Chicago that perhaps then made, you know, the ground start shaking, reverb in his voice as he said, "Outside of Chicago is not Chicago. You're not from Chicago. Say what suburb you're from."
Well, the other day there was going around on Twitter, I don't even remember what exactly prompted it, but somebody was discussing Detroit and said they lived right by it for like a year and it was terrible. And then the conversation continued and they're like, "Yeah, spent about a year in Saginaw. I was not right in Detroit, but it was there a lot." And, you know, predictably everyone just, because Saginaw is 100 miles away from
Saginaw
Detroit.
Is roughly the same distance to Detroit as Champaign is from Chicago.
Yeah, it's not close. And it's not like it's, I mean, again, 100 miles. Like, even Detroit sprawl does not go that far. And there's, like, so you get to the edge of Detroit, and then there's, like, 30 or so miles, and then the Flint Metro. And then you get past that, and it's, like, 30 more miles before you get to, so, anyway. That makes me laugh, but...
So
we've gone through our worst takes on this podcast. Unless you've got any more particular stinkers you can think of, we could pivot to the good times. Anything in particular that you particularly enjoyed covering?
Well, I will say that generally I enjoyed everything about last October when Illinois just kept winning and took a huge lead in the Big Ten West title race, because it's the only time I've ever felt invincible as an Illini football fan. You know, you have these periods of time where it's just like, oh my God, we can't lose, right? And I mean, I know you know this because you were with me at Keyworth Stadium last April.
Yeah. I mean, as far as MSU football goes, that hasn't been since 2015. So it's been a hot minute, but I do recall the feeling.
It's like, yeah, my power is maximum. It is unlimited. But maybe an even more fun game to dissect was the 9 overtime win against Penn State by the Illini, because everything in that stat, like, it's one of those funny things where everything everybody does is so hideous and somehow comes together in a beautiful symphony. The way that, what sticks with me is the way that in a tie game, they kept running the ball at the end, knowing that the biggest risk actually
was letting
the quarterback do anything, letting Art Sikowski do anything.
Oh, yeah.
They did and they were still trying to run the clock. Not run the clock. They were trying to get down the field as fast as possible. They weren't huddling or anything, but they were running the ball. So they did like a 2-minute drill without throwing because, so help us God, we're not losing this game on an Art Sikowski pick six.
Yeah, you know, we outlived Scott Frost start to finish, so that most of the steps of the way was enjoyable, because for all the bravado and all the puffery that he engaged in towards the beginning, there were really not a whole lot of signs that they were especially close to putting it together, and so I felt perfectly comfortable going out on the branches that we did of, wow, bud, you're writing a lot of checks considering your team doesn't look very good yet.
Yeah, you know, Scott Frost should have been really easy for me to root for as a hometown guy coming back to try and revitalize a program that was, you know, that used to be good and is no longer. I wish that, you know, when we were in the doldrums, we'd have something like that. I mean, Bielema now claiming to be a native son of Illinois is a bit like that, but... And somehow Scott Frost took this and made me not like him. Just by being Scott Frost. I mean...
Right, and it's also like... He started doing that stuff before the pressure of not yet succeeding should have really been getting to him. Like, he kind of went to it on his own, right? So... That was a
Nobody
pretty
made
easy
him
thing
do
to,
this.
Yeah, that was a pretty easy thing to root for. I rather enjoyed our one on-site broadcast, and that was why, by the way, I was pretty sure we had started in 2016, because the game that we covered in person was MSU-Iowa in 2017, and if that had been our first season, that would have been like the second or third week we were doing the podcast, and I did not think we had gone out there that early. Like, I thought that was our second season.
I don't know. Well, my question is, did I have a dog when we started the podcast?
I'm pretty sure you did. I don't think I've ever known you when you didn't have Moon.
Well, you have, but only briefly. So that basically means, because we met in 2016 in person through Off Tackle Empire, and I got Moon... in the early part of 2017. So, you know, in fact, hanging out with your then psycho dog kind of informed me a bit on dogs, but I got R2 to trust me very much.
Yeah, no Huskies and no German Shepherds, and certainly no mixes thereof, if I were to offer advice to any prospective dog owners out there. He is very much mellowed in his age, but boy, was he an asshole when he was younger. Again, our working theory is he was a Christmas puppy that somebody dramatically underestimated the commitment of and then jettisoned. And he didn't learn anything from it. And he's very lucky that we're just extremely tolerant. So here we are. And again, like,
well, in my opinion,
now he is very chill and a very good boy, but he was not for a long time.
In my opinion, you should get a hound dog. I'm firmly in the Holly Anderson camp, who, by the way, she's apparently blocked us on Twitter a long time ago at Off Tackle Empire. I'm not sure what we said, but I'm sure it had something to do with the buildup to the Indiana-Tennessee bowl game that one time.
Very likely.
But yeah, no, I'm with her. But what she does undersell about hounds is they're hilarious. They are genuinely hilarious.
Well, hopefully it'll be a while before we have to make that decision again, although both our dogs are getting a little bit gray in the face and long in the tooth, but...
So...
Well, I think...
The question is, in the Big Ten here, we're now in a situation where you can look around at a lot of football programs and say, like, you know, this is in pretty decent shape. I mean, things have not gone well for Tom Allen, but he has won... Greg Schiano, Rutgers has recruited pretty well, needs to put it together. Everywhere else is kind of like, well, okay, you know, this certainly looks promising, but you cannot have 12 happy endings. You can't have 14 for sure. We're not all going to have happy endings. The question is, who is going to suffer? Because, yeah, I've seen a lot of takes about how we're kind of in like a golden age of Big Ten football coaching. But again, not everyone can have a successful coach because we got to play each other.
Right. Something's probably going to have to break amongst the power teams in the Big Ten East. Like, I don't think it won't be exactly the same, I don't think, but if the last few years break, I mean, Penn State gave a big extension to James Franklin, but how much longer are they going to be satisfied with third place? Ryan Day, if he loses a third in a row to Michigan, do you really think they're going to keep him around even if he wins every other game? And then Jim Harbaugh has now turned his two conference championship seasons into desperate attempts to get back to the NFL. Like, plainly, he's not going to stop doing that. So... If the more success he has, the better his case is to be hired back into the league where he clearly would prefer to be anyway.
Well, he would potentially be the forever coach if he hadn't lost a Super Bowl to his brother, right?
Sure. And so I bring up those three guys, though, because you said, you know, who's going to suffer? Even if
none of those guys have done quite everything their fan base has desired. I think with Harbaugh in particular, it's pretty hard for anybody to nitpick where, like, it took a little longer than most people thought, but
it's hard to nitpick what he has done as a football coach from a wins and losses perspective.
And that is exactly where we're going to stop at, because I really don't want to talk about any other shit involving him in our last episode. So my point, though, is I don't think it's possible for the fans of those three programs to live in this stasis. Like, in maybe not next year, but, or maybe not this year, rather, but in the next 2 to 3, I think one of those coaches is going to be gone. Like, I don't think it's possible for all of them to live and keep their fan bases happy.
It's going to be Ryan Day.
Probably so. The question is just, does he leave for an NFL job before he gets fired? You know, I can't come up with a good example. Or is it the Cliff Kingsbury thing where they're like, yeah, he got fired in college, but look how good he is with quarterbacks. We got to have this guy.
Now, Ryan Day has won so many more games than Cliff Kingsbury.
Yes, he's also at Ohio State instead of Texas Tech. So anyway, that's just at the top, though. I wish I could sit here and tell you after 3 years that I have any idea what Mel Tucker's tenure is actually going to be at Michigan State. I don't. Mike Loxley at Maryland, does it really feel like there's much upward trajectory left on him? Congratulations on getting to fourth place. Who are you going to jump next? Is it going to be Penn State? Is it going to be Michigan? Is it going to be Ohio State? Kind of hard to predict any of that. And as you mentioned, probably the sad sack programs, you know, outside of Northwestern are Indiana and Rutgers right now, where it's like, boy, you're so far away. So far away from anything approaching success. We covered the West already in considerable detail, where I think the odds that Pat Fitzgerald hauls this thing out of the ditch are pretty long. It might have to take a multi-year rebuild. You've got a couple of new coaches, but then you've really got, I mean, honestly,
the athletic director at Northwestern doesn't have to fire Chris Collins now.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. The guy who has had the most success the program has ever had in one sport has now moved himself off the hot seat, which maybe applies a little more pressure to Fitzgerald, but I don't think they're ever going to fire him. Like, he's an institution there. So sooner or later, you assume Kirk Ferentz will hang it up. The odds that Iowa's next football coach is anywhere near as successful as him, very long. Very long.
You know, he has a name.
Yeah, Brian.
Sorry, there's just no way out of this. There's just no way out of this. It feels like Iowa is a lot more disgruntled about Iowa than Minnesota is about being Iowa.
Yeah,
I made a graphic
sure.
A while back. I think it was at some point last year or the year before. I think last year was when I finally ran out of ideas for the infographics thing. Plotting the extent to which you are Iowa against how happy you are about being Iowa. Right, whereas like right, Michigan yeah. was extremely Iowa and was very mad about it.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas Minnesota, also very Iowa, was perfectly thrilled to be that much Iowa. Which is strange because, again, it's not like Jerry Kill and Tracy Clays were every bit as bad as Tim Brewster. Like, they've been through some junk, but there was never a position where – what feels kind of like an 8-9 win parameter is going to be like, that should be all they ever hope for. Like, if Michigan State can have a run like they did with D'Antonio, there's no reason a program like Minnesota can.
The four quadrants of that chart, by the way, were, if I recall, I reject the premise of Iowa. God, I wish we were Iowa. Yay, we're Iowa. And oh God, why are we Iowa? Which I think I put Iowa in the oh God, why are we Iowa quadrant.
Well, wouldn't that have been Michigan?
Well, yeah, I mean, Michigan was definitely the farthest corner of the oh God, why are we Iowa quadrant.
Yeah. Oh yeah, right. So you plotted everybody on this.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, what I wish I could say is that funding our hosting costs for a fall edition of the podcast will make me do the infographics that I know is probably the everybody's favorite thing that I do. I can't guarantee anything.
No. So, insofar as this will be the last time we directly address our audience, I want to thank everybody who's been with us, whether it's been from day one, or if somehow this happens to be the first episode you stumble into, that would be unfortunate. But in either case, it's meant a lot to us to know that somebody is listening to our ramblings, mostly kind of relating to Big Ten football and sometimes basketball and occasionally other sports, but mostly those two. We hope that you've enjoyed our content. Continue to make your way to Off Tackle Empire as long as it exists, which who knows? Again, you know, we're part of a parent organization that decided all audio media needed to be jettisoned 2 weeks before the NCAA tournament. So take for that what you will, in terms of how much longer this website will exist at all. But it's been a long time. Whether it was actually 6 years or seven, and that we can't even remember, I think kind of gestures to where we are in our lives. But you and I have become extremely good friends, primarily through the time we spent together doing this podcast. So if nothing else, I have found it an incredibly worthwhile endeavor for that reason.
Much appreciated, and I feel the exact same way. But you know what? I would also like to address the people. You only address the people who listened and enjoyed our content. I would like to address the people who listened and did not enjoy our content. To those who listened and did not enjoy our content because we had these recurring audio issues that just gremlins every single week that I couldn't figure out a way to contain until our very twilight moments. Well, consider this episode an apology to you. Consider this dying gasp, you know, what I think is some fairly high fidelity, to be my heartfelt apology to you and my, you know, and just my proof that, you know, I could have done it. And to everybody that listened and didn't enjoy our content for its content's sake, I say I also thank you very much for listening, because you know what? Sometimes you just like to go and find someone to get mad at. I get it. I do the same thing. Thick Stauskas on Twitter described us as his favorite podcast to get mad at. And boy, there's no higher honor that we could receive than that. So I thank absolutely everybody who has tuned in regardless. And we will see you on the other side of the final podcast.
Oh, we'll head back to SoundCloud. If there is demand. Too loud, and that's why we got candy. And with so many games left to play, things to be wrong about. Wrong about. I'm sure that you all miss us so. It's the final podcast.
Source for Big Ten Talk, it's Off Tackle Empire.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.